This episode of the Westwards podcast is a production of Westwards, Western Sydney's literature development organisation. We'd like to acknowledge that this podcast is created on Darug land, and we pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. You are listening to a special series of episodes hosted by members of the Westwards Academy and alumni as they sit down and interview their guests from across Australia's writing and artistic scene. Enjoy.
For joining me today for this podcast episode.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So I'll just give a little intro about myself. I'm a Westwards academician for this year, and I've also done a master's in creative writing, and I'm working on a novel as well as being published, having essays and short fiction published over the past few years. And Hayley, my guest, is an internationally published author. Her debut novel was Dirt Down, which became an instant number one Australian bestseller last year. It's been translated into multiple languages, and it's won a number of international and national awards, including an ABR for the General Fiction Book of the Year, a Lambda Literary Award for LGBTQ and Mystery, and the CWA New Blood Dagger. Hayley also holds a PhD in creative writing from the University of Wollongong and lives on Dharawal country on the east coast of Australia. Hayley, to launch into our talk today, obviously we'll talk a little bit about Dirt Town because there were some things there which I wanted to highlight. But as I've mentioned, you've done your PhD and the result of your PhD was Dirt Town. Tell us a little bit about how that process of writing was for you.
Yeah, well, firstly, I want to say thank you because I love having an opportunity to talk about the PhD, and it's not always something you get a chance to talk about at sort of writing festivals and stuff, because people are often there to hear about the book or just the creative process side of it. And for me, I wouldn't have written Dirt Town without my PhD. I can really categorically say that. And it's an experience that I am really glad that I did and that I really loved doing, but was also challenging in its own way. So it's nice to kind of dig into that in and of itself. It feels like a pretty juicy thing to talk about. For context, I guess early on, or when my undergraduate degree was not in creative writing, actually, I did an honours in sort of history and politics, so something completely different. Right. But what I didn't realise at the time within creative writing sort of studies, and this is true across many universities, a creative writing PhD is basically the opportunity to kind of write a long creative project and have it sit alongside a sort of a big academic project that is not as long as if you were only doing that side of it, basically, is how it was explained to me. And my thought was, oh my God, you know, they're going to let you write a book as part of your output. And as soon as I heard that, I kind of went, wow, that sounds kind of too good to be true. And it was in many ways. I mean, I think the best part of doing a PhD is being paired up with a supervisor who is more experienced and is in my case is very much a working writer, and having that guidance from the beginning. The flip side of that, though, is that I came into the PhD knowing I wanted to write a novel, and there was something about the framework of that both helped alleviate some anxiety, because I knew, okay, this is what has to happen. You know, I've got this amount of time and I'm going to write this book as part of it. The flip side of that, of course, was, oh no, I have to write a book in this shorter amount of time, you know. So what is good about it is also what is challenging about it, I guess, which is that you go in knowing, okay, I am going to have a significant creative output. My bottom line is that I loved it. And I think people often talk about PhDs in a really negative way, or like they're very difficult. And in fact, I think I would have enjoyed my PhD more if I'd realised how good I had it at the time that I was doing it. Because it's really astonishing to be able to, in my case, I looked at a particular style of narration that I was really interested in, and I was able to read really widely about that, you know, both novels that were told in a way that I was interested in, but also kind of narrative theory more generally. And I think those experiences and that ability to really just read and think deeply for years completely shaped the book that Dirt Town would become.
No, that's really interesting. So you went into the PhD knowing that you had a basic plot line. Did you have that?
Uh-huh. Well, actually, I pitched a completely different project for my PhD, and I recently had to get my supervisor who's now a good friend and who's still supervising, asked me, oh, can I get your kind of pitch or your application document for the PhD? And I pulled it out, and it was just a reminder of how different the project was. It was originally going to be a completely different novel, actually. It was going to be set between Australia and outer space and America and all these places right. in between. And it was not anything that sounded like a crime story at all, which is kind of the beauty of a creative writing PhD, in that I guess I had an interest in what I wanted to study. And I will say, very early on, I realized that creative project wasn't going to sustain me for the time that a PhD kind of gives you. And I actually sat down to write a short story about the small town where I grew up. And when I started writing about that place, I went, oh, this is the novel, because I have a lot to say about this place. This idea that you need to go in and begin a novel, I think, with a solid, I'm not really a planner anyway, but I certainly didn't go in thinking, great, this is the book I'm going to write, and this is what it's going to look like. And I did have friends who began the PhD with a really solid project in mind already. So, but both are possible and both are viable. And my supervisor was quite nervous when I said, oh, actually, I think I want to do this other thing. It's one of the great challenges of being a writer, is knowing, when are you just bored and when are you just sick of, when does it actually not have enough to sustain you? And I'm really glad that we figured out early on that the heat of what would become Dirt Town was, there was enough there to kind of keep me going.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't start with a good sense of where I was going, and I've learned that you don't which is great, you don't need a good sense of where you're going actually to either finish a PhD or write a novel.
Okay, well, that's reassuring for anyone who's thinking about it. That sort of kindly segues into the next question that I had for you, which was, I think, so you mentioned earlier on you had an interest in the particular points of view.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm going to speak as the, I'm imagining the people that will listen to this are people that are the kind of people that are actively considering a PhD, or are at least curious what that framework can give you as a writer, right?
Yes.
So I mentioned that I was not someone who had studied creative writing at an undergraduate level, but I was very interested in, I read a book called The Wives of Los Alamos, which was from this particular point of view, which I found very compelling. But I had already had this idea that I liked, I was interested in an unusual point of view is at play in a narrative. So one of the most common unusual points of view is second person, right? So you walk into the room, and which is not that common in narratives, right? But it almost, it sort of doesn't matter what it actually was. It was more, I had this feeling like, this is interesting to me. I don't know much about it, but I feel like there's enough interest to kind of sustain a bigger project, I guess. But I think I could have picked almost anything. What I didn't realize is, within the PhD, there is a big scope for what constitutes new knowledge. So I went in quite nervous and with a lot of imposters, feeling like an imposter, which a lot of people begin their PhD doing. But I had actually not studied the content, right? Like, I had not actually done a creative writing degree. But then I realized, okay, all I have to do is sink into this topic and take it seriously, and I'll probably be able to come up with something that will pass this idea of new knowledge that a PhD needs to do. And what I did, I mean, some people are really interested in, say, French theory, or they want to do a feminist reading of something. Or for me, I realized, I can just do close readings of this unusual, books that have this unusual point of view, do enough looking at sort of narrative theory, and I tie them together. That will be enough to be a PhD. And I wish I'd sort of realized from the start that I didn't have to do anything other than follow what I was interested in and what I could, like a PhD is often saying, what about if we think about these things in relation to each other? Or what about if we consider this really specific thing? And I think if you're thinking about doing a PhD, you want to go as narrow as you can in some ways, because I think it can be very hard to become an expert in all of this stuff. And really, I think you're learning at that stage how to research and how to articulate ideas and how to write persuasively. What you pick should interest you and also not be impossibly huge to begin with. And it was really lovely to realize, oh, like, close reading is valued in creative writing studies. Like, you can spend time really engaging with works, and it's not, I didn't have to kind of master Foucault to do a PhD, but you can, if Foucault is your bag, you can go there. It's kind of that equivalent of, you know, when you're a kid and you get to kind of set your own essay question in primary school or whatever, and you get to write like what you really love and what you really care about. It's exactly like that. And I wish I'd known that a bit earlier, because I think a great deal of the stress of the PhD was feeling like I was trying to measure up to someone else's idea of a PhD, when in fact you just have to be as compelling and to follow your own. What I guess, question that you're genuinely trying to understand the answer to is a really good basis for a PhD. So for me, I was wondering, how do these points of view make these books better? Because my gut feeling is that they do, but I don't know how that's working on a technical level, an artistic level, a kind of almost a spiritual level, right? I was like, something is happening here that makes me feel feelings.
Yes.
And that can be the basis of a PhD. It doesn't have to be this dry thing that you don't have skin in the game about, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to the PhD bit later because there's still a bit more I wanted to ask, but let's stick with the points of view at the moment, because in Dirt Down, you've actually got, is it 5 different points of view?
I do have 5 points of view.
And they're all different in terms of the fact that there's the we, which is the Greek chorus, first person plural point of view. But then you've also got Ronnie, which is first person singular. And then you've got Sarah, who's the detective, who's a closed third person point of view. And then the rest of them, Lewis and Constance, are also similar sort of closed third person points of view.
Yes, spot on. Yes, yeah. It's so nice to see those choices kind of that you spend a lot of time. And my PhD was all about point of view. Point of view is obviously something I thought about a lot and wrote about a lot. It sounds like a small thing, but even when people notice that Ronnie, for example, is in the first person singular, which I did for a number of reasons, you know, it's just satisfying to know that people notice or that it comes across.
I was thinking when I was reading that this would have been really hard work, getting into so many heads at one time. And then there's also the thread line, because you do go a little bit back and forth in time. So I wanted to ask you, how was that process? And how did you do the writing? You've got to keep an idea of the timeline, but you've also got to keep the different, you know, points of view in mind. And then obviously you're juggling with first person, third person, and all of that. How did that work out?
It's interesting because I feel like your first book, you are trying to do so many things. And I certainly now, you know, I do some mentoring and teaching, and I wouldn't advise someone who's writing their first book to write 5 points of view, one of which is a disembodied collective. It's being narrated from a point 30 years in the future or 25 years in the future, and over the space of 3 or 4 days when the main events happened. That took a lot to even understand that was how the story was going to be told. There was a lot of writing that happened and was thrown out. So, for example, the first draft was actually only from the point of view of this collective of children, which I describe as, I was interested in this idea of the Greek chorus in, say, a traditional Greek play. You know, they come out, they comment on the action, they might lament what's going on for the hero, and then they sort of shuffle off as a collective off stage. And I was really interested in, what if we had that, but it was a group of Aussie school kids in this small country town. And so they were the first vehicle that I used to tell the story. And so I learnt things about the story, like the fact that most basic element of the plot, which is that a girl had gone missing, and I had figured out what was going to happen to her, what the resolution was going to be, but not any of the stuff that happened in the middle. And that first draft was pretty much unreadable, because it was fun to write. It had all these great details of being a kid in a small country town, but it lacked a sense of story in a way, because they weren't very close to the action. They were this observer. They were by nature kind of observers of what was happening. Mm-hmm. And my PhD supervisor said, I think you need to give us some characters that we can actually care about and get to know.
Yeah.
Because it's all well and good to tell us this girl is missing and that we should care, but at the moment I'm not feeling it. And so that led to the creation then of the 4 other characters you mentioned. So Ronnie, who's the character who is probably closest to my own experience. You know, she's the age that I was at the time that the story is happening. She was kind of the first layer. And then I realized, oh, there had been in the story a boy who saw something happen on the day that Esther, the missing girl, had gone missing, but was too afraid to come forward. And that was already kind of in the plot. And I thought, well, he would be an interesting character to include his point of view. And then I had, the idea that the mother of the missing girl there would be a lot going on for her.
Yeah.
And that was also, you know, I thought there are things I need her to know and to see. And then the last character, before I sort of shut the door and said, okay, no more point of view characters, because this is getting a bit crazy, was the investigating officer. And actually she was a very late addition, in that she'd always been in the plot, but having her actually investigate and go through was a very late development in the story, which is often surprising to people, because as a reader, you now read it as fitting a narrative of there's someone investigating and we're going to find out what happened. Again, it comes back to this idea of, you don't need to know where you're going. You need to kind of begin. I almost feel like there's different advice for your first book, because you are trying to hold, you're just trying to make things happen, and enough things happen that it's a story, and you're trying to have characters that feel real and setting that feels real. And I, for me, I had to kind of progress through the story and discover the story very much. I was not someone who was like, okay, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And so it was this very big, sprawling, messy process. And in the end, I think I wrote the book from pretty much everyone's point of view to find out what happened, because that's just how my brain works. I wasn't able, for whatever reason, to hold that whole story in my head at the beginning. I had to, it was more an act of discovery.
So that first draft, is that what it was, really finding the plot?
Because the first 10 drafts were finding the plot, really. The plot was only fully found very much towards the end of the process.
Right.
My advice for emerging writers is that you're learning how to be the writer that you are as well. So you're kind of, there are things that are maybe a touch more efficient about my process now. But I think the main thing was that because I had this, I knew the book was due and I felt a lot of pressure to do it in the time, I kind of just felt that I just had to keep moving. And I think for me, I figured out it was better to focus on time spent sitting with the story rather than beating myself up for feeling like, okay, how can I be 3 years into this project and still not have a full sense of the plot, right? Really, the book that it needs to be will take the time that it takes. But having that deadline did help me kind of go, okay, I'm this far in, and I feel like when you're a beginner writer, you do the stuff you enjoy doing. And for me, that's sort of learning about the characters and writing setting and stuff. And then it's like enough time passes and you've backed yourself far enough into a corner. You're like, oh no, I have to do all those things I'm not good at now. And that to me is what writing a novel feels like. It's like you do the bits you can do, and then suddenly you've got enough stuff that you go, oh no, now I've got to try and do the things that I feel like I can't do, or that there's no way I could have begun doing that. And for me, that was plot. For other people, it will be other things.
Yeah.
But I think this sense of, I really believe, like, throwing yourself into the project for that first book. And for some people, that will mean they want to spend a lot of time plotting, for example. You're just trying to find a way to sit there, actually, is we think of writing as a very cerebral process, but I think of it as a very embodied process. I think it's like, how do I get myself to sit here and care about these people that I'm trying to make live on the page?
Yeah. So what you said, that you had a lot of, you started off reading widely and sort of really doing close reading of the different points of view and books that had that. But then you found, obviously, as you kept writing, you realized this is going to be a crime novel. Did you then start sort of looking or reading widely, or did you already read crime?
What
did you have in that?
I'm aware that it sounds implausible, but I really did not realize that there were so many elements in the book that suggested it was a crime novel until I was maybe 4 years in and I got a manuscript assessment with the Kill Your Darlings. It was part of a prize, actually. It was a really great, they unfortunately don't run it anymore, but it was the manuscript prize where even if you didn't win, as part of being shortlisted, you got a manuscript assessment.
Right.
And that was really so useful because I'd been working on it with my supervisor for years. You know, all my friends, I have a lot of writer friends, had been really wonderful and gracious and given me all this feedback and read it so many times. And I've really learned you can only read something so many times, you know, and still see it. And that actually sometimes the first read is always the most useful. But it was the first time someone I didn't know looked at the story and objectively said, look, this is kind of what you're promising to the reader. When a girl goes missing and I can see this cop character kind of in the story, it's like I want her to solve what's going on. I want this person to solve what's happening. And that's when it started to click into place. Like I could see all of the reasons that it might be frustrating to a reader to get certain information and not others. So that was almost like I was 4 years in and then the real work began, because I had figured out who everyone was and some of the important beats in the story, but then I had to go in and give it this satisfying structure, which again, to go back to that previous image, it was like I had backed myself far enough into the corner that I then had to do the thing I really didn't want to do, which is think logically about causality and plot and the drip feeding of information to the reader. But it was my favorite part in the end, that editing process that I went through with KYD, and then later talks with, I was able to get an agent and she helped me as well, and then eventually the publisher. That felt like the most wonderful apprenticeship I do believe that a book isn't finished until your conception of what it's meant to be has kind of changed in some way. And it doesn't have to be a big shift like it was for me in genre. I was sort of thinking I was writing about a crime that had happened, not a crime book. And I think, yeah. You know, that was the distinction in my mind. It's not until the book has enough in it that it can suggest something to a reader that you didn't see there in the first place, that you weren't consciously putting in. I don't think it's like rich or interesting enough sometimes until you've gone through that process. And maybe I'm just saying that because I'm bad at plot. But I, even with book two that I'm working on now, I've just had the most amazing feedback, and it sort of like becomes clear to you the story you're trying to tell, and it's different to the story that I began with, even though I've learned a lot. And I think I do have a better handle on plot, and I was more aware of what the reader would be thinking and feeling. I still had a lot to learn. And I think a good story has something to teach you. You know, I think you're not just there, you're not a robot just sort of executing commands. You are responding to and making a piece of art, is how I think about my writing.
With that, I've understood, what I come to understand is that you didn't actually finish writing the book when you finished your PhD. There was more work to be done after the PhD was
Yeah, so I finalized a version for the PhD, and there was actually a point where then I got the manuscript assessment, and I sort of put aside the book. I basically finalized a version of the book, already knowing there were things I was going to change, but kind of going, okay, this I think meets the requirements for a PhD. If I keep working on the manuscript, the exegetical part, so which the exegesis refers to the writing you do about your own writing, if that makes sense. So the academic writing that you're doing about the creative project that you made, which is a part of the creative writing PhD. So I realized, oh, if I keep changing this thing, I'm going to have to change the academic component. And so I got some really good advice to like freeze it in time, make it good, have it proofread, and let that be the creative component of your PhD. And, you know, and that book passed. I mean, I got a commendation from one of my markers, like they enjoyed the book, and it was up to scratch or whatever. But and then there was still so much work to be done on the other side, which is the kind of depressing reality sometimes.
In terms of draft number, where was that? Was that sort of like, how far had you come to the final product?
One big distinction is there was a point where the cop went from male to female. Right. And so the PhD contained a female cop, but I then went on to do a lot more work on her character and her plot line. So I think it was almost... in terms of draft number, I couldn't even tell you, but there was about another 18 months of work.
Yeah. Okay.
After that frozen kind of version that I submitted. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's really, I mean, for those of us who are sort of thinking about writing a novel, that's a really good sort of idea of how the day-to-day reality of writing a novel via PhD is, that it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll finish it, but you'll at least get started. And as I think, coming back to the PhD process itself, so from what you've said, I understand that having an you know, having your sort of your supervisor there is like having someone in your corner.
And absolutely. And I think that, I mean, it's worth noting, I do have one friend whose book is basically getting published, that is the version she submitted for a PhD. And I don't think I can say who it is yet, but it's going to be a great book with a great publisher. And that's fine. Like, she's smarter and a better writer than me. And that's, you know, and I think, but what I've realized is actually what makes you a writer is your ability to stick with it until it is ready, and to know, and to continue to listen to advice and sort of give the book everything that it needs from you. And that will change on the, you know, in the case of my friend whose book is kind of going to be published without many edits. I think she had been working on that project for a long time. And also, you know, books sometimes come together and coalesce. But I think the main thing is, your job as the writer is not to, I work with a lot of emerging writers who are like, I'm done, I've finished my novel. And I kind of, it's not up to you to say when the novel is finished in many ways. It's sort of, I think I wasn't able, I thought I was finished so many times.
Right.
But the reason my book was published and it is as good as it is because I was able to kind of keep picking myself up off the floor and go, okay, it needs more. It's such a subjective thing, but you want to feel like you gave it everything that it needed. And often it's not up to you to say that it has everything it needs yet.
To say when the end is.
Yeah.
Well, that could be another question all of its own, and I think we won't have time to explore that one. How do you know when your book is finished? But let's park that one for another time. But during your PhD, what was your sort of, like, were you doing it full time, Hayley?
I was, and like a lot of PhD candidates, I was also teaching, and sometimes that teaching got pretty full on in terms of course load, or I took on maybe at times more teaching than I should have because I needed the money. Because I mean, the stipend when I was doing my PhD was about 25 grand a year, which is $500 a week, which depending on your, you know, your living situation, to meet my bills, I've needed to do other work. But also I it was definitely the first and most meaningful period of, oh wow, like, this is my job, like, I should be writing, I should be spending the day or a big chunk of all of my weekdays working on this thing. And for me, it has created a pattern that I still follow, which is that I work on weekdays and I have a certain amount of time that I need to, that I commit to the creative project that I decide ahead of time. And I do that and I give myself the weekends off. And I, you know, and I think other people who haven't had that, I think it's a side effect of doing it the way I did, which is where I was doing the PhD full time. I think I have friends who get more done than me, who are squeezing it in around other things, but when they're doing it, they know that's their only time that day to do it.
So during your working day, would you sort of say, you know, during your PhD working day, would you say that you would have spent some time actually writing or some time reading? Because obviously close reading was a big part of it for you. Did you allocate time for that?
Yeah, and I'm a big believer that every writer has to figure out what works for them. And for me, it was, I had to write the creative stuff first thing. As soon as I opened my email or opened the PhD academic document, it's like there are so many things you could be doing. There are citations you could be checking. There are other essays you could be reading, other primary sources you could be reading. And I realized if I just keep doing this busy work, which is necessary and needs to happen, and I also need to do my timesheets for my casual job, and I need to mark my students' work. And but it's like, for me, if I can get to my computer and write and engage with the creative work before I've done anything else, it's kind of getting that part of my brain that it needs, which is the dreamiest kind of least connected to the world part and most internal facing part. So I think for most PhD people, you want to, the biggest lesson is, don't wait till you know what you're doing to write. And that's true for both the creative and the academic. And I think for most people, working on the creative first every day, or every day that you have, even if it's for 10 minutes, will keep you like connected to that creative project. And there'll be deadlines, you know, there'll be times where the academic has to take over because you've got a performance review type thing. There are various kind of and different unis do them differently, but you'll often have to do a presentation, or you'll have to present on some part of your research. For me, the beauty was being able to move between both of them, because the academic work was sometimes a break from the creative work. But for me, I needed to do the creative first, because that's what I found most difficult, and kind of hardest to get into the right headspace for.
That's a great tip, I think. Or, you know, because we always, otherwise there's always ways to procrastinate and move away from, or do the other busy things. You have to do the other things that have to be done, whereas the creative work also has to be done. So
yes, and it's very hard to, you're sort of like, oh, I need to write a novel. It's hard to give that a sense of immediacy and urgency.
Yes.
And yet if you don't give it a little bit of immediacy every day, or every day that you have to work on it, then it won't happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. So did you have a daily workout that you were aiming for, or was it sort of like an hour time limit?
Yes, I think for me, for some people, word count's really useful. For me, I figured out that time is the most valuable thing, particularly because at different stages, often a good day's work, I've deleted like 2,000 words because I am an overwriter. Yeah. And so I found time was the most reliable way. And I was someone who really struggled to sit and focus for long periods of time. And so I use the Pomodoro technique that listeners might be familiar with. And I literally just tried to build up, which is 25 minutes of timed work with no internet. And I basically just over the course of my PhD tried to get better at that. It's something I still struggle with now, even as I'm working on my second book. But I have a system that works, which is, okay, you've agreed how much time you're going to spend. You've broken it down into chunks and you have the internet off, you know, and that's what I needed to do. For other people, it's more joyous, or it's something that's the part of it they enjoy. Whereas for me, getting the draft on paper is always the hardest part. And then I tend to enjoy editing more. There are other parts of the process that I find easier, but actually getting a draft of a novel down, I found to be, I had to just kind of trick myself in as many ways as I could come up with.
All right. Well, that was a really great deep dive into PhD, you know, life as you know, and also the points of view. And I have so many more questions, but I think we'll leave that for another time. I've had a really good time and learned so much talking to you today, Hayley. And I'm sure that everyone listening to the podcast will also have lots of questions for you as well. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you think so, Zora. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to ramble. I've enjoyed talking about this with you today.
Yeah, me too. Thanks very much, Hayley.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Westwords podcast. For more information on Westwords and what we do, please visit westwords.com.au.